Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Weekend. We've got Thursday night football coming. We have college basketball coming at the end of the week. We've, of course, got the Chiefs this weekend. KU back in action this weekend on the football field. A lot to get to today, and we'll do it all. We've got our betting insider, PJ Glasser, joining the program bottom of this hour to get us ready for some Thursday night football and the football betting weekend. We will also have our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, at 10 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation, not just about the disappointing game in Houston for K-State, what it all means now. We have our first CFP rankings. We have some clarity on things. We'll get into all of that and, of course, talk some college basketball with Fitz of GoPowerCat.com as well. The IHOP hotline will be open for you otherwise, and it is brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with the new IHOP House faves. All your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. That number is 869-1240. Tommy, good morning. The sun came up. We're 2 days past an election, and the sun's come up both days.
Hey, feel good. Yeah, feel good about it. I mean, just overall, like, seeing the sunshine outside today is nice. I know that we are going to probably, I think it looks like, get some more rain maybe tomorrow and into the weekend, which obviously is much needed. Yep. But the one thing, I don't love the time change, but the one thing about the time change is not feeling like you're driving to work in the dark, which is good. And so that's been good the last few days, and having the sunshine out is also good too.
I don't like that. This time driving home from work in pitch black, like,
It's a trade-off.
I don't this trade. I like the other trade. Okay. I'd rather it stay a little lighter, a little longer into the day, but hey, it's okay.
Hey, Tommy.
Jad. Yeah.
I still drive to work in the dark.
Jad, you're here at like 1 o'clock in the morning though.
There's no time change that could help you with that, Jad.
None exactly. And I guess if I'm being honest, I kind of like driving in the dark, so it's okay, but still.
I don't like the time change. It gets dark too early. It's fine. It's whatever. We're getting to that point of the year where it's so cold that I just don't really care anymore. It's just like we go into lockdown mode until the sun comes out again. But we are getting some rain. By the way, speaking of that, I'd invite keep an eye to 12 News and Catch It Kansas, our friends covering high school sports, because a lot of high school football playoff games are being moved up, are being moved to different days. There's a lot of changes. It is the playoffs. So you need any of that information, you can go over to Catch Kansas. We'll talk to TJ Cleland about that tomorrow. But that is happening. Some of those playoff games are now tonight. So if you're following a team not closely, you might pay attention to that schedule before you make all your plans. We had a trade deadline come and go in the NFL. We had the CFP rankings come and go, all sort of lost in the chaos of election season, but we're through all that, Tommy. The trade deadline, the most interesting thing is that the Chiefs were in on Marcus Lattimore before he ended up going to Washington. He would have been pretty affordable this year, would have been a nice fit, but would have been really expensive over the back 2 years, over another 2 years forward. So I would have been pretty surprised if they did that. I'm fine that they didn't do anything. I think all in all the moves that they made collectively is enough. I think they did everything they could. And I think it's a nice collection of players. And now some of the young players on the roster are just going to have to, get a little better. They're going to have to get a little better internally at left tackle. They're going to have to get a little better internally at corner. They're going to have to get a little better internally at wide receiver depth. And I think all of those things are definitely on the table to happen. So all in all, the glaring needs that must have been filled, that could have been filled, I think the Chiefs got them filled. And I think they did a good job.
You could definitely tell what was prioritized leading up to the trade deadline from Brett Veach. I mean, clearly it was wide receiver first, and they go and get DeAndre Hopkins, and then a pass rush with Josh Uche, coming in. And then from there, it was cornerback and then probably left tackle, maybe even another wide receiver if you wanted to rank it as far as the top needs for Kansas City before the trade deadline. They got the top two accomplished, at least from a priority perspective that you know that Brett Veach was looking at. Would it have been great if they had been able to land a cornerback like a Marshon Lattimore? Sure. You know, I think that left tackle, as we talked about before and discussed, that's more difficult to obtain at a trade deadline. I would imagine that if there is a future player on the Chiefs' radar at left tackle, that's going to be more like a waiver wire, like a free agent pickup down the stretch, getting ready for a playoff push for Kansas City. But I think that's going to be dependent on injury or, you know, because I'm not sure that Wanye Morris could play any worse. And so if you are wanting to, you know, justify a move being made right now for a left tackle, well, they haven't made one yet and he's not playing well right now. So it's going to, I don't think that it's a situation where we're going to wait and see if he plays any worse, because I don't think he can play any worse. I think it's going to be more of a depth type thing if they go and acquire that.
I think, you know, you look at it and is it good enough to get them to it? Yes, it is. They're 8-0. So of course it is, right? Like, of course it's good enough. Would you like it to be better? Of course you would. I think what becomes interesting to me is the Chiefs have tried so hard for so long to solve left tackle. You know, basically in the post Eric Fisher era, they've run a lot of guys through there. They've invested a lot there. High draft capital through trades to bring other players in, a lot of money, and they still don't have it solved. And now you've got Wanye Morris and Kingsley Suamataya. I think what's really interesting, we talked a lot the other day about a guy like Xavier Worthy, who we differ in opinion on where he is now. We agree on the opinion that he'll get where he needs to be by the, you know, by whenever. Like, he'll grow into the player they thought he would. We agree on that. I'm not sure I feel that way at left tackle. And so what's interesting is they still don't have it solved, and they'll probably still have to go attack it this next offseason. Because you've got Patrick Mahomes there and you've got to protect him. So, but it is what it is for now, right? You're beholden to the growth of these players and or coaching around them, right? Like, just making it work. And they've done a really nice job of doing that so far. Always makes you hold your breath at that position because it protects your quarterback's blind side. But the Chiefs offense has done a really good job of masking it when they can. And I think DeAndre Hopkins, honestly, the way we saw them play offense against Tampa will help too, because those quick passes make it not matter nearly as much. Do they get to take as many deep shots? No, they don't. But they can still take them when they choose. And so that's what we have now. This is the Chiefs roster. It's obviously good enough to win a Super Bowl. They will get players back that are hurt, and it will make them stronger. And now, you know, I know the razor thin margin to 8-0 is there. It just becomes a question of how, you know, you stack them up against the best teams in the AFC. And we'll see one of those teams tonight, if not two of the teams you'll at least see in the playoffs tonight, depending on how the Bengals can hold out here. I think I saw they had like a 24% chance. Their window's pretty small, not like Jets small, but it's pretty small. But you gotta, you know, basically they would have to pass, I think, Indianapolis and I don't even remember who the other team is. It's on the table. Either way, we'll see Baltimore tonight, right? And so we're going to see these teams. We'll size them up. We'll keep doing that because now we're looking at the roster. And Baltimore made a move, by the way. They went and got Tre'Davious White, who's not the player he used to be, but at one point was a really good player. That's a big time area of need.
They also
for
got
them.
Deontay Johnson. I mean, they stacked up at the deadline too. I mean, the Deontay Johnson move was before the deadline, but still, I mean, they're looking for reinforcements, and from a firepower perspective, they've got it. I mean, they are explosive, and I think that, and I know we'll talk more Thursday Night Football as the show goes on, but my first thought on this matchup is this is a prime opportunity for Baltimore to say we are the class of the AFC. Like, we are the team that is most primed to prevent Kansas City from three-peating this season. And I think that this game against the Bengals, they can absolutely reestablish that.
Yeah, they can. And I'm excited about this game tonight. Obviously, it's a divisional game. When we talk about Cincinnati right now, just because I brought it up, down to the Chargers, which is the sixth team right now, the odds for them to reach the postseason are very high. Like, the Chargers are up at 88%. Everybody else is basically like 99% chance. And then you have the next three teams, which are Cincinnati, which are Denver, in which are Indianapolis. Right now, Denver and Indianapolis's chances are technically higher. And then there's Cincinnati. But I think Cincinnati's a better team than both of those teams. So we'll see how that plays out. They're desperate tonight. That's why I think this game is fun. I don't know if I think they'll win it yet. I'm curious to get PJ Glasser's take on that at the bottom of the hour. But I think we'll get a good game. And that's all we can hope for on Thursday Night Football. We got a good one last week. Let's take a quick break because we want to get plenty of time with PJ there. We talked a lot about Xavier Worthy. We've talked off the air a little bit more. Patrick Mahomes, he was asked about it a lot yesterday. I don't know why this is on the forefront of everybody's mind, but it is. I'll tell you kind of what Patrick Mahomes was saying, and then we can further that discussion of the first-round rookie, how he's fitting in for the Chiefs. We've got college football talk coming today, all kinds of good stuff on the program. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here at KH and the entire Odyssey family each and every morning. Don't go away. Sports Daily. Come right back. Back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jake Ballbrock, Tommy Caster. Seeing that the Ravens are going to wear some new helmet tonight, Tommy. Purple Rising. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Got to see him in action. I'm okay with the alternates that the NFL runs out lately. I think they've all generally been all right. This one, changing the helmet logo, though. Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I think it's fine. I'm always a fan of new alternate uniforms. I don't care what the sport is. Whenever I play like a video game, I would rather do the throwbacks or the alternates or the color rush or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm always picking the unique uniform combos. I'm always a fan of that.
Yeah, I'm not typically. But I do think most of the time the NFL gets it pretty right. And when they're super wacky, we can all make fun of it. I don't think this is a super wacky situation. All right, let's get to the KFH hotline here, the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. Craig there with a message for me, I'm told. Craig, what's up? Welcome to Sports Daily.
Hey, Jacob. I just want to compliment how good you did on the election coverage the other night. You're like an all-star. You're reporting on the presidential race, and everybody in the set was excited, and I think you're completely underrated. The next day, I turned the radio on, and here you are after all that election coverage, and you're back on Sports Daily.
That's right. Back in the good spot, right? Hey, I appreciate that.
Hey, Craig, how much did Jacob pay you to call in and give him those compliments?
He did not.
Really?
I've watched this guy from when he showed up to do sports just grow into an unbelievable broadcaster. I can't say sportscaster because he does news. I just want to tell him how proud I am of him. I think he does a great job. And no, he didn't pay me anything. Savage might have bought me a beer to say it, but no one paid me anything. I just want
Craig,
to say a great job, Jacob.
Thank you. Election night was fun, and I appreciate that, Craig, a great deal. So they had me on touchscreen. So, you know, you see it, you know, that you touch and you go to the county by county. What's interesting,
you were doing
is
the big wall? I had no idea. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much all night. And it was, you know, because of what was happening and because we didn't really have any highly contested races here outside of like Sedgwick County Commissioner, which was more of, you know, going in, we didn't really know. But otherwise, we had a pretty good idea, right? But the presidential became quickly, especially on this night, the most interesting. So we were hitting it a lot. What's funny about that is on the touchscreen, you know, when I first moved here, in 2014, we had kind of just gotten that thing and we would telestrate and we would do all these fun things. And at the time, like, that's high end technology that was pretty primo. Right. And so as the sports guys where we have more freedom, we would use that thing all that we'd telestrate. We do all these different things. We would make graphics. We always use that just to try it. Right. And then it kind of got passed up in, you know, technology wise. Well, now our parent company, Gray, which has hundreds of stations, they develop some technology sometimes. This is the best one they've ever done. So it was awesome. Like, it was fast. It was great. So yeah, I'm up there firing away on these counties and states. I tried to give, you know, Alabama to Jill Stein, but nobody would listen to me. No, it was fun though. It was fun. And I appreciate that, Craig.
I hope Craig recognizes the collateral damage of those comments where, you know, because I know that smile on your face, like that smug, like I'm going to have to deal with that for the rest of the show.
I love it. I love it because I know how much it bothers you. And so that's what's making me laugh. I appreciate it.
I mean, it's well deserved and I'm happy for you. Good for you.
Yeah, that's right.
Craig, thanks for the comment. Now I've got to deal with this smug guy for the rest of the day.
Thanks, Craig. Speaking of, you know, awesomeness, Xavier Worthy. I think this is a really interesting conversation, by the way, one we accidentally backed into the other day about whether or not we should be expecting more out of him. What are we in week 10? I definitely think we should. Tommy does not. I think, again, I want to reiterate long term. And by the way, this weekend, I really like Xavier Worthy in the matchup against the Broncos, just FYI. And we'll get into that later in the week when we preview that game. But I do think it's been disappointing for him so far. And I think, you know, a part of it is because of the opportunity he could have taken. But I do think, in fairness, we also have to pay attention to the fact that left tackle hasn't been very good. So how much of an opportunity to get downfield has he had? I think that he is still a very valuable piece to the offense for sure. And I think DeAndre Hopkins will help him a great deal. But he should be doing more now by week 10 of a rookie season as a first round wide receiver. He should be. I think he'll get there. Patrick Mahomes was asked about it yesterday. And he of course he's going to defend his guy, but he did say he is like drawing the attention we need him to. So like at a minimum, he's helping the offense just by being there and being a threat. Mahomes did say, like, I can see that, right? When we send him out or we send him deep, it does accomplish what we need it to accomplish. And then he talked about he'll get there with some of that other stuff. So he's become a really interesting player. And what really interests me, because I don't try to emulate any like opinions or anything from anybody I just see online. I don't like to do that. And as we bring him up or that conversation happened, man, you just look and that conversation starts happening anywhere. I told you and you had to step out for the day. And Dan Israel brought it up before I could. So and I think it's just because that one play was such a mistake by him that it's like, what's going on here? And then everybody starts to look at the numbers. But I do think he needs to become a bigger part of the offense. I think if D-Hop doesn't open him up, though, we've got some concern.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. You said that I don't think that they should be expecting more out of him. I'm okay with having higher expectations for him. That's not my beef or where I disagree with you. I'm just not disappointed in him yet. So I think it's okay to expect more out of him. He's a first-round draft pick. Yeah, he's, you know, somebody that can be an integral part of the passing game and just the offense in general for Kansas City. So I'm okay with having higher expectations for him. That's perfectly fine. But I'm not ready yet to say I'm disappointed in his growth and in his development. And I know, and you and I went back and forth on this the other day, you know, Rashee Rice was a second-round pick. Through the first eight games of Rashee Rice's rookie campaign, he had more receptions, he had more yards than Xavier Worthy does. But Xavier Worthy is averaging more yards a catch than Rashee Rice did, and they have the same number of touchdowns. So I think that you hit the nail on the head a moment ago, and you said that really what has this under the microscope is the mistake that he made in the Monday night game. He should have walked into the end zone. That should have been a touchdown. I will concede that left and right all day. That was a mistake on the part of a rookie wide receiver who is learning and finding his way in the NFL. But I'm not willing yet or ready yet to say that I'm disappointed in where he is right now. I think he will continue to grow, and I think he'll get there. He's got the talent and the pedigree to be able to make that work. So I'm not ready yet to say that I'm concerned about him. I think I told you off air, if we get to the end of the season and it's still where it is right now, then yeah, like let's have a conversation, but I'm not ready yet to say that I'm concerned.
There's a lot of things in play. I think it's not just the mistake the mistake bothers me, because that's what he's here to do, is make that play specifically. And he was wide open. It's that because of that mistake, right? The Chiefs had to win a game in overtime. Like, they didn't get any points off that drive, if you'll remember, right? That wasn't they had
there
to settle for a field goal.
There were a lot of reasons, though, that they had to play in overtime. I don't think you can put it all on his shoulders.
But we know even this year, and we certainly know going back to the last two when you get to the postseason, that like the Chiefs are so close, a ball bounce, like so close to not have won two Super Bowls in a row. So if it doesn't get better, I think the problem becomes like if Mahomes can't trust that play gets made, like he can't go to that play in the postseason where you don't have the room for that mistake. Like that mistake cannot happen in the playoffs. And so we're in week 10. And I think when you and I were talking and we kind of put the Rice numbers now, it wasn't so much like the year to date numbers. It is what Rice began to do in the middle part of the season. Like if you go and look at what the last three games, right, the middle portion of the season began to look like for Rice, Worthy has regressed statistically. Like he's gotten worse as the season has gone on statistically. Now, again, full disclosure, he makes that play, his stats are way better, right? Like the margins are too thin on that. But I think it's indisputable that last year we would say Rashi Rice began to take off about week six. Like his ascension started.
But know why that
whereas
is.
Worthy doesn't feel like he's getting any better.
That was necessity for the Chiefs offense. Like Rice had to, because there were no other options. Here's the difference with Worthy through eight games. He started off the season not needing to be the number one guy because he had Rashi Rice next to him. Even though Hollywood Brown was injured, he had Rice out there. He had Juju Smith-Schuster. Like there were other receiving options outside of Xavier Worthy where he didn't have to be the guy. Rice goes down, Smith-Schuster goes down. There's a couple of weeks where a rookie wide receiver is your number one guy. And that's a lot to put on somebody brand new into the league.
But that's what was put on Rice.
I understand that, but that was further on in the season. It was about at this point and moving on. I'm talking like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Worthy was shoved into that role as soon as Rice went down. Now you've got DeAndre Hopkins, and you had 2 weeks with Hopkins to get acclimated to the offense, where the offense doesn't have to, at least the passing game, doesn't have to run through Xavier Worthy. I agree with you. I think this weekend in Denver and moving forward, I'm starting to look at Xavier Worthy as, okay, now he can actually settle back in to the growth and the ascension that everybody's expecting from him. And if he doesn't, then yeah, let's have a conversation. But right now, I'm not ready to go there.
I'm going to give you two reasons why I think he will have a big game this weekend and why I would be very concerned if he doesn't. Patrick Surtain will almost certainly take away DeAndre Hopkins. And two, Patrick Mahomes has heard everybody talking about Worthy this year. Patrick Mahomes has a history of...
Oh, he's going to force feed him 100%.
Correct. So that's what I mean. Like, this weekend should be a big Worthy game, and if it's not, I'm moderately concerned now. I would become far more concerned if he can't take it, because this is the perfect opportunity for him to go take it. And again, I think he will. I'll bet that he will. I will bet that happening this weekend with actual money. Let's talk about some other bets. BJ Glasser, he's on deck. He's ready to roll. Let's talk some bets next on Sports Daily.
KFH.
Back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster on the line is the host of Send It In, an Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. PJ Glasser Insider Calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast for more analysis. Just search Send It In wherever you find your podcast, including on the Odyssey app. PJ, welcome in. Your Ravens on Thursday Night Football tonight, wearing a new helmet. Happy Thursday Night Football to you.
To you guys as well. Yeah, it's almost like a throwback to those color rush days, right? We get the Thursday night game and the teams would be all decked out in like one color. So it's a big game tonight. I'm going tonight, which I'm excited about, my first game of the year. So should be fun. I mean, with the way that Lamar and Burrow are playing, it should be another entertaining game.
You know, so PJ, the Ravens bucked that trend. Sorry, you mentioned last week. Yeah, that trend you talked about last week with the Ravens and the NFC, they clearly bucked it.
Yeah.
How do they follow that, though, now with a short week divisional game?
I mean, that's going to be the key. You know, John Harbaugh in his career, they're 8-0 on Thursday night games. So they're normally really good in these short weeks. Cincinnati should have won the first game between these two teams the first time around. It was a crazy finish with McPherson missing the field goal and then Henry breaking off that run for them to win it in overtime. But yeah, it's going to be a great game. You know, tonight, like Cincinnati guys, this game probably is their season. They can't afford to drop to 4-6. They can't go 0-2 against Baltimore. They won't have any chance at winning that division. So the Ravens know that Cincinnati's coming in there, and they're going to play with their hair on fire. They're going to play like they absolutely have to win this game. I was really impressed with the Ravens because, Jacob, as you mentioned, I mean, we talked about it last week. Usually those 1 p.m. games, they really struggle. They bounce back after that tough Cleveland loss, which was nice to see. And, you know, now in a short week, they have to back that up and play another good game because it's tough to beat a team two times, especially a team as, you know, potent as the Bengals.
I'm seeing the over-under right now, PJ, at about 53 right now for this game. It's high. We know the Ravens can put up points. I mean, that's what they do offensively. We also know that the Bengals defensively this year have not been very good. So, I mean, at least in my mind, everything is trending towards an over. But I'm sure that because of all of that, it's going to be like a 17-14 game.
Exactly. Yeah, it just feels like the over is too easy, right? Yeah. I mean, Lamar and Burrow both have over 20 touchdowns this season. The first time these two teams played, it was like 41-38. The Ravens have been a dead over team this season because of how great their offense is and how bad their defense is, their secondary especially. Cincinnati for much of the year has been a good over team as well. So it feels too easy, like you said, Tommy, which is why I'm staying away from it, because it wouldn't shock me if we got another 38-35 game, but at the same time, like, it wouldn't stun me if it was 24-20 either. So I think the side and betting Cincinnati plus the 6 is the way to go, guys. Yes, they've lost 5 games this season. All 5 of those games, though, have been decided by 1 score. So it's not like they're losing to people and they're getting blown out. All these games are coming down to the wire. I don't expect tonight to be any different. So I like the Bengals plus the 6. As for the total, I'm staying away from that. I could see it being higher scoring, or I could see it being a game in the mid-20s.
Could it be one where, and we don't do, you know, I know a lot of people don't advocate for teasers, but in a situation like that, is there a tease option if you put them together? Like, maybe you think the total is just a little too high. Maybe you like the Bengals but wish they had a little more. Is there any value in putting those together and adding a little each way?
I don't think this is a good game to tease. I think a lot of people might want to tease it just because, again, if you tease the Ravens, you can just get them down on the money line with them being 6-point favorites. I would actually tease it the other way and take Cincinnati plus 12 if I had to do it. And then, again, if you want to tease the total, maybe you tease it down to like 46.5 or something like that. But I think there are some good options on the board this week in the NFL on Sunday for some teaser opportunities. I don't think this Ravens-Bengals game is a good teaser one. I would just take the Bengals plus the 6.
We'll get back to the NFL in just a few minutes, PJ, but I want to go to college football for a second because we've got, you know, obviously the first college football playoff rankings came out earlier this week, and that some of the top teams are, you know, playing, I guess, maybe what you could look at on paper as cupcake games. I wonder what your thought is on, you know, some of these major matchups, like whether it's Oregon against Maryland or Ohio State against Purdue, Miami taking on Georgia Tech. Is there a game that's featuring maybe a top 5 or top 10 team against an opponent where it looks like, you know, it's such a big number that they're going to have trouble covering?
Ohio State, I think, is going to roll this week. I think Oregon's going to roll this week against Maryland. I think those teams are fine. Texas, I think they're going to be good against Florida as well. They're coming off their bye week. I expect them to look good. Florida's obviously got the injury to their quarterback, so they're going to be on their third string. I think all those teams would roll. If you're looking for a top 5 team to struggle this week, Tommy, I think it's Miami. I think that would be the team going on the road and playing Georgia Tech, laying an 11.5. Miami's just one of these teams, guys. It's kind of been playing down to the level of their competition. You know, you think about some of their results so far in the ACC. Fortunate to win that game against Virginia Tech. Fortunate to win that game against Cal. Only beat Louisville by 7. They were down 11 points in the second half to Duke last week before just flipping on another switch and winning that game by 20. But, you know, Miami's been the kind of team that yes, their offense is so good, but their defense has not been good, that they've been kind of letting some of these big underdogs hang around. And Georgia Tech's coming off a bye week. That's a good offensive team that's healthy. And I think Georgia Tech can keep it close. So Georgia Tech plus 11.5. If you're looking for kind of one of those like top five, top six teams, it could be on upset alert. Obviously, Georgia's got the toughest game of the weekend of any of the top teams. But any of those teams that are double-digit spreads, I would look at Georgia Tech keeping it close.
PJ Glasser, our betting insider, joining us now. Let's stay in college football and go to KU, who was off last week. 2.5 points is all this is. KU's at home against Iowa State, a team with playoff aspirations, but a team that lost last week. Kansas has a chance to be a real spoiler in the Big 12. What do you think of that 2.5 point line? I kind of looked at it as like a great opportunity for Kansas, but I also didn't expect it to only be a 2.5 point line. So now I don't really know what to think of it.
Yeah, that's a stinky line, isn't it? Only being 2.5. I mean, the line tells you that Kansas is the right play. I mean, you get Iowa State, who's been the far superior team this season, only laying a short number under a field goal. And the matchup for him should be pretty good, right? Like, obviously, Kansas, their offense has struggled for much of the year without Kotelniki, and the passing game has not been good. And, like, going up against Iowa State, who's so well-coached and good defensively and thrives off, like, winning the turnover battle and beating other teams off of their mistakes, like, this should be a good matchup for him. But that line is a tricky one. I think with these Big 12 teams, guys, that have obviously been good for much of the year, like, you're going to start to see some, like, stinky lines with them, because odds makers, books makers, professionals, they kind of expect the regression to start hitting. They expect the other shoe to drop. That's why we saw a couple weeks ago, like, BYU was underdogs to unranked UCF, right? This week, they're laying a short number to Utah. This is why Iowa State, their spread's a little bit fishy against Kansas. So I think these Big 12 games, you know, I think more often than not, you see lines like this and you would take Kansas. You would clearly take the team that it doesn't feel like you're supposed to take. But in these Big 12 matchups, I don't know if most of them, but that's the case. You know, BYU just keeps covering spreads. I think Iowa State's the much better team. I think now that you're getting them at 2.5, normally I'd be on the side of Kansas, but not in this game. I actually like the Cyclones.
PJ, we haven't talked in a minute about the Heisman race, and, you know, week by week things change, you know, all the time. Cam Ward, you know, now is the odds-on favorite in that race, but really it's, I don't want to say it's anybody's game, but it's definitely not definitive at this point. What are you seeing in that race? Is there, at this point, any kind of angle with the futures, or is it something that you want to wait on until a little bit later?
You know, the Heisman this year, guys, is so fascinating. I can't really remember a year like it where you're just, it's almost like process of elimination every week, you know, and it's kind of just going to be like the last man standing who seems like it's going to win the award. I think Travis Hunter right now, if you have any Travis Hunter tickets in your pocket, I think you got to be feeling pretty good. Colorado had a heck of a bye week, guys, with Kansas State losing and Iowa State losing. And now all of a sudden they have a shot to maybe make it to the Big 12 championship game. I think if Colorado makes it to the Big 12 title game and they have a chance to make it to the college football playoff, I think because of what Travis Hunter's doing on both sides of the ball, I think there's a great chance that he's going to win. Dylan Gabriel's having a good year, but it feels like we have this every year at the beginning of November where the quarterback of the number one team in the country is kind of in contention for the Heisman, but I don't see him really winning the award. Cam Ward, I think, would be the other guy. He has the numbers and the stats, and obviously his team's undefeated and they're top five, but it just feels like Miami's kind of a fraudulent top five, right? They've definitely had a couple of close calls and games where they certainly could have lost. So I think it comes down to Cam Ward and it comes down to Travis Hunter. I love the Ashton Gentry story, but it just kind of feels like isn't having the kind of games that he was earlier on in the year. So it just depends for people, like if you're a believer in Colorado, if you think the Buffs are going to be a contender in the Big 12 and play in the Big 12 title game, I think Hunter is going to win the award. If you think they lose a couple of games here down the stretch, I think it's going to go to Cam Ward in Miami.
I have a future. I took Jenty at the beginning of the year. I'm going to need that to change. Maybe they'll get into the playoff. I don't know. All right, let's go back to the NFL, BJ. Nothing screams at us. Let's start with your favorites this week, and then we can get to the Chiefs in a little bit.
My favorites, guys, couple bets I like. Let's start with San Francisco, -6 at Tampa Bay. I think this is a brutal spot for the Bucks, who are obviously coming off that OT game against the Chiefs. They got a short week, and they go up against a San Francisco team that's coming off a bye, right? Like, you can't get a more polar opposite kind of game in terms of healthiness or freshness than this one, with the Niners coming off a bye, Bucks coming off a short week on a Monday night overtime game. We know Tampa's dealing with the injuries. They're without Godwin and Evans. It felt like they exerted so much energy against the Chiefs with that comeback, that final drive, going to overtime. And now they got to turn around and play a really physical team and a Niners team that's getting healthy. McCaffrey's back at practice this week. So I think anything under a touchdown with San Francisco, I like the Niners quite a bit at minus six. And then a game that I really can't wait to watch this week is the Commanders and the Steelers. A big game for both teams. Obviously, Washington's been a great surprise. I think Pittsburgh's been a big surprise too. Russ has played well the first couple games. They're coming off a bye week. Guys, Mike Tomlin's won seven straight games off a bye. He's 5-2 against the spread. And obviously, Jaden Daniels been taking the league by storm. But if there's a team that might be equipped to stop them, it would be Pittsburgh, because they see Lamar twice a year and they know all about the running quarterback and that kind of skill set. I can tell you as a Ravens fan too, if there's a team that Lamar struggles with year after year, it is Pittsburgh. They're always the team that forces the most turnovers off them, that stops them in the run game the most. So I think the Steelers are going to have a good game plan. You're getting them at the key number of three. I like the Steelers off of a bye week. Keep in mind, too, Washington's got Philly upcoming on Thursday, right? So maybe a little bit of a look ahead for them. Huge divisional matchup on a short week. Pittsburgh's going to have their full attention on Washington in this game. I'll take the Steelers plus three.
We talked about Baltimore and Thursday Night Football at the very beginning of this segment a week ago, PJ. On paper, at least, the Ravens-Broncos matchup looked like it was one of the games of the week, and then Baltimore just smacked around the Broncos. Those same Broncos now playing the Chiefs this weekend. And, you know, the number is bigger probably, you know, in response to what happened a week ago with Denver. I'm seeing a line at about 7.5 right now, so more than a touchdown number for the Chiefs to lay. That seems a little fishy to me, because even though the Broncos did get smacked around, you know, they've won some games and Bo Nix has looked like a pretty decent rookie quarterback. What do you like in this matchup as far as an angle is concerned? Do you think that the number's too big for Kansas City to lay?
I do, guys. And as we've been on the air, this line continues to drop. It was 8.5 this morning before I came on with you guys. It's 8. Now I'm looking at BetMGM and it's down to 7.5. We saw something similar when the Chiefs played the Raiders a couple weeks ago, and the Raiders covered that game under a touchdown, so they lost by 7. I kind of see the same thing with Denver. Look, I was just talking about what a brutal spot it was for Tampa, right? Coming off a Monday night game, overtime game. Well, Kansas City's dealing with the same thing. You guys know they have the Bills on deck, which is the biggest game of the season. Could decide MVP for Josh Allen. Certainly looks like it's going to decide who gets the number one seed in the AFC. So maybe a little bit of a look ahead for the Chiefs in that aspect, but I think so many people are going to see that the Broncos got smashed by the Ravens last week, and now you're getting, you know, them at an even shorter price against the Chiefs, and people are going to like Kansas City. I think this line movement dropping down, though, guys, I like Denver to keep it close, plus the 7.5.
That's interesting. I don't know if I do. I mean, Surtain, the Chiefs offense feels like it's clicking to me at the highest pace, and maybe you look at it there at 41.5. As an opportunity, as the Chiefs defense is probably not as good as it was a few weeks ago. I mean, any thought to that? Because Mahomes is starting to cook a little bit. And I know Surtain's there, but Surtain can't guard Hopkins and Kelsey and, you know, over the top to Worthy and, you know, the running backs and Kareem Hunt. They still, I don't know, maybe offense is a way to look at this game, because Kansas City's defense wasn't as good as it was 2-3 weeks ago, and their offense is much better than it was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Honestly, I think a Denver team total under is a great bet as well. I'm looking at BetMGM, 16.5 points. Like, do we see Denver scoring 17 on this Chiefs defense? You know, they got 10 on Baltimore last week. So Denver's only path to victory, if you like the Broncos, you got to correlate it with the under. Like, the Chiefs defense to begin with is so great. If Denver's going to keep this game close, guys, it's going to be 20-13. It's going to be 17-10. So I think if you like Denver, you got to like the under. But as we're talking about it, because yes, Bo Nix definitely does terrify me. There were throws that he missed in that Ravens game last week that really could have made that game closer than it was, could have applied a little bit more pressure against Baltimore. So Bo Nix on the road in Arrowhead definitely does scare you. The line movement moving more so and more so down towards the Chiefs made me like Denver a little bit, certainly with the potential look ahead spot against the Bills. But now that I think about it, guys, Broncos team total under 16.5. I think that's the way to go in this game.
Okay. We like it. PJ, we appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. Get rowdy. Stay safe out there. And hopefully for all of us, it typically is better. Let's have a lot of points scored.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, guys. Have a good week. Talk to you soon.
There goes PJ Glasser, the host of Send It In, an Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. We will talk about that Ravens-Bengals game. I love putting in all the same game parlays and things on Thursday Night Football. I'm not real sure how to attack it. I do think there's an opportunity to make money with it tonight. I'm not 100% sure where. We'll talk about that in the second hour. But when we return, we go back-to-back guest, our K-State insider. Excuse me. So sick of it, Tommy. Tim Fitzgerald will join us. GoPowerCat.com. I want to get his take on Houston, the Big 12 overall, the CFP rankings, and of course, K-State hoops. That's next on Sports Daily.